KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. There are many accounts of the afterlife. Eben Alexander's is different than most because as a secular neurosurgeon, he didn't believe it until he had a near-death experience. Eben Alexander has been an academic neurosurgeon for 25 years at Harvard Medical School and other places. He makes his case for the afterlife in his book, Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife. He joins us today from the studios of NPR in New York City. Eben Alexander, thanks for your time.
Well, thanks for having me, Ross.
You know, the title of your book, Proof of Heaven, when you say proof, I think of a mathematical proof, an incontrovertible proof. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the important thing to understand is that what my journey showed me, mainly through having such a severe bacterial meningitis and having such a rich journey at a time when I should have had no experience at all, is that our consciousness is actually a much richer experience that is freed up when it is liberated from the brain and body. And this journey, combined with information from others, really does indicate that there is an eternity to our spirit or soul.
Eben, in your practice as a physician, I'm sure you encountered many people who believed or wanted to believe in God and an afterlife. What was your attitude toward the afterlife before your near-death experience?
Well, I thought that all these experiences must be hallucinations or dreams of some sort, that they had to be brain-based, because all of my understanding before my coma was that the brain creates consciousness. And what my journey showed me very clearly is that consciousness is completely independent of that in a sense. It's very much a rich existence that is not dependent on the brain. It's not created by the brain. And so I now know a very different story about our soul and spirit and awareness that happens after we die.
This is a very rich topic, consciousness as independent of the brain. If you just joined us, Dr. Eben Alexander is my guest. His book, Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife. Maybe you've got a question for him. 206-543-5869, 800-289-5869, or write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Your account of this near-death experience is kind of extraordinary. Primordial, grotesque animal faces, clouds, sound of a glorious chant, an orb that spoke to you. Did this series of experiences have some kind of an arc, some kind of a connection, some kind of a narrative, or was it just one thing after the other?
Yes, it was actually very much an odyssey, a very interactive odyssey that began, as you said, in that kind of murky underworld, but then led into a beautiful gateway, a idyllic realm that I think is somewhat attached to our earthly personality and culture, but then beyond that to something that I call the core, totally outside of all of higher dimensional space and time, that has that divine presence and that brilliant orb of light and all of the knowledge about things far beyond our human knowing. And I would keep cycling through these realms, and it really had a very strong story arc to it, but I was told that I was not there to stay, that I'd be coming back. And I didn't know what that meant because the meningitis had pretty much deleted all my memories of my life before.
How long were you in the coma, and did you have any sense of time in what you were perceiving while you were in the coma?
Well, given that everything was gone from my memories when I was first in coma and deep in this awareness, it seemed to go for a very long time. And I mean, I would say months, years. It's hard to put a number on it, even though my coma in Earth time only lasted for 7 days. But time flow in that realm is very different. And in fact, we're not stuck to Earth time when we're out there. So a short span here on Earth could be very long there and vice versa.
You write that this near-death state, you were in a world of consciousness completely free from the limitations of the physical brain. How do you know that?
Well, I think the thing that was most helpful was the fact that I had this severe meningitis. And meningitis is offers the best model for human death, because a severe case of meningitis attacks the entire outer surface of the brain, the neocortex, and that is the part that makes us human. All of our human experience, visual, auditory, speech, understanding, rational thought, everything about our body awareness and everything around us occurs in the neocortex. So to wipe that out to where it's non-functional, I should have had no experience whatsoever. And in fact, I had a much richer, more interactive and complete experience than I could muster even now in a brain that I think is fairly intact.
Why could it not be that those experiences, those what you were seeing, what you were hearing, were not part of some brain activity that as of yet we have not been able to detect and find?
Well, I think several things are important. One is that I would cycle through, that kind of murky underground realm that initially I thought was the best consciousness that my physical brain could muster. And from that would go into this ultra-real and beautiful, vivid, interactive gateway valley, and then out of there, outside into the core, which was infinite in size beyond all dimensional space. And the richness of the conceptual flow and understanding in those two realms was really stunning by comparison. But then I would come back into that earthworm eye view. And I think there was a lesson there. It took me a long time to understand it. But it had to do with the fact that my brain was not manufacturing that rich realm that I encountered at those depths when, I would start from that earthworm eye view.
The descriptions the nearest thing I can think of is the end of 2001, The Space Odyssey, the kind of utterly strange experience. Maybe that's somewhat of a cinematic idea of what it is that you describe in this book. But it also has resonance with people who've taken LSD trips because it was so huge and psychic. And when someone returns from an LSD trip, they realize that, well, all that was not really going on. But it sounds as though you returned from this near-death experience feeling as though what you experienced, what you felt, did go on.
Yeah, I think another thing to realize about near-death experiences in general is that the memories from them, the experience, often changes people's lives, and this certainly changed mine tremendously. And also the memories and the experience are as fresh today as they were, as if it happened yesterday. And that's in contradistinction to after I came out of coma on the seventh day and they took out the breathing tube and I was starting to recover, I was still very much on the edge. And I spent about 36 hours in and out of a kind of a psychotic, delusional, paranoid nightmare that was very rich with language, totally different from my deep coma experience in which conceptual flow was there but no language. And those memories from that psychotic nightmare that came after my coma faded away within weeks. And that was a very murky, nightmarish, kind of chaotic existence compared to what happened deep in coma, which was actually very clear and concise and interactive and explanatory in ways that are beyond really the ability to communicate it. And that's an important thing to realize. This is not a dream or hallucination.
Dr. Eben Alexander is my guest. His book is called Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife. And part of the impact of this book is the fact that you are a neurosurgeon. We had an email from Martin who challenges your authority to make this judgment that your consciousness was independent of the brain. He writes, I'm not sure how qualified a neurosurgeon is to claim proof of heaven. A neurosurgeon does surgery. They do not study brain function, end quote. What's your response to that?
Well, I will admit I had to learn a tremendous amount about consciousness over the last 4 years that I really did not need to know as a neurosurgeon. As a neurosurgeon, we know a few things about consciousness, but the bottom line is when you talk to neuroscientists and those who claim to know a lot about consciousness and how the brain and mind work, what you find out is there's not a single one among them who can give you the first sentence to explain how consciousness is created or emerges from the physical brain. Everything we know about the physics, chemistry, biology of the brain is all very wonderful, but it doesn't even begin to tell us anything about how consciousness is created.
The old mind.
That's a crucial thing to understand.
Yeah, the old mind-body problem that I can remember talking about in philosophy classes. Where do the two come together?
It is, and there's something called the hard problem of consciousness, which at its depths is probably the deepest mystery known to all of humanity, and therein lies the crux of it, that and the enigma of quantum mechanics, because they're both telling us something about the nature of consciousness and about the nature of reality that's very important to understand, and that's what took me so long to try and get at in writing this book.
Where did God and heaven come into what you were experiencing?
Well, it was very clear in that realm that love is the coin of that realm. And in fact, that unconditional love, those words pale compared to the reality of that concept that explains so much about a lot of how God has been interpreted over millennia by different religious faiths. And yet, the real core of that all-loving source is knowing the power of that unconditional love for each and every one of us. And even when I was trying to write this up as a neuroscientific report in the first month or two after the coma, I knew that I had to somehow explain that intense, overpowering sense of love that is there in that realm that many people who have near-death experiences talk about. And it is very powerful. It's profound, and it's really there at the core of our existence.
In some ways, do you miss that experience that you were in?
Well, it is an absolutely beautiful realm beyond human description, but I know that I came back here for a reason. I think there is a divine plan, although it took me more than 2 years to admit that, you know, this happened to me for a reason, because I was just trying to be the scientist explaining it all as an objective observer. But the reality is that I think there really is a plan to a lot of the things that happen to us. And our mission is really just to try and follow the simple rules of acting as a conduit for that unconditional love and showing compassion and forgiveness and really loving ourselves and loving others just as we are loved by that divine creator. And that's really what we're here to do.
So, Dr. Alexander, do you treat people differently? Is your outlook on life changed?
Everything has changed, and a lot of it came from realizing that our soul and spirit must be eternal, that consciousness actually is at the core of all that does exist, and that our consciousness does not go away but is actually liberated when freed up from the brain. And in fact, many people can get to this through centering prayer and deep meditation. You don't have to have a near-death experience to get to this. And I think meditators and monks and many have known this. Mystics have known this through millennia, because we can all get to that very same place.
How has this new understanding of the universe coexisted with your knowledge before you had this coma? Have you had to reject or toss away some things you thought before you had this?
Well, I think I'm very much a scientist, and I see that what we need to do now is broaden the boundaries of science, to admit that reductive materialist science, which is kind of the current conventional scientific view, is hopelessly lost in trying to explain how consciousness would emerge from the physical brain. And in fact, the enigma of quantum mechanics and the hard problem of consciousness become much more tractable when one realizes the primary role of consciousness, which at its essence is our spirit or soul, which is eternal, connected at deeper levels, and connected to the divine at the deepest level. And it helps me to understand the science much more clearly by knowing that everything works that way.
You write it will take you for the rest of your life to unpack what you learned in this week, in this coma, in this near-death experience. Are you unpacking things constantly? This happened a while ago, but are you every month or so, does something else come out of that bag?
Well, it happened about 4 years ago, and about 2 years ago, I started meditating for an hour or two or three a day. And I use acoustic kind of assistance in my meditation, which is a very powerful way of boosting transcendental conscious states. And I say that, you know, a lot of new kind of insights comes from those meditations. A lot of it is something I won't even uncover in this lifetime, but that's fine because I know the journey is really what this is all about, and humans will never know everything. And any kind of talk of a theory of everything is kind of very misguided. Because we will never understand everything there is to know about the higher dimensional multiverse and all of existence.
Dr. Alexander, how do you know that your experiences in this near-death experience apply to us? We got an email from Ginny who writes, I was in a coma for 5 weeks and I profoundly disagree with the speaker. It was nothing.
Well, I think to me that's one of those very interesting questions. In the near-death experience literature, the general figure is that for people who have a medical situation like a coma or some bad injury or something where they come close to death or would have any reason to have a near-death experience, only about 15% of people actually come back with memories that are, you know, would qualify as a near-death experience. And that has been a mystery to me, you know, for these last 4 years. I do not understand why that is the case. It turns out that those 15% comprise millions and millions of people in the U.S. who have been there, seen this, and, you know exactly what the others are talking about because it's very real, and it often changes their lives, although many people won't even talk about it because you do come back and you're labeled kind of crazy. But the more I talk about it with people, the more I realize that these experiences happen to millions of people all the time and that it is real, and not to just discount it as a crazy, hallucination or dream, because there is a lot of reality to these experiences.
With some people, what you're saying resonates strongly, but how about others? Have you actually lost friendships, or have people dismissed you who you knew before this happened to you?
No, I think people were very forgiving. I'm very open-minded about this because I think just like everyone else, I want to try and get closer to the truth about what this all means and, you know, what our existence is all about. And that's why I think it's important to point out, and I try to shift the emphasis in my discussions away from just my experience to point out how common this kind of thing is among millions of people and has been for thousands of years, and how it depends heavily on understanding the hard problem of consciousness, which is a well-defined scientific question, and the enigma of quantum mechanics. And in that sense, it really has to do with the fundamental nature of reality and our existence.
Dr. Eben Alexander, thank you so much for speaking to us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Ross.
He's an academic neurosurgeon. He's worked at Harvard Medical School, and he's written the book, The Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife, about 7 days he spent in a coma and the revelations he experienced from that. David Hyde produces our program with Arwin Nix. We get production help from Cameron Drews. Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.